Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm in socks and sliders with some jogging bottoms. I would describe my look at the moment as post-breakup, which is not the case. I look like this is a walk that you've had to really persuade me to come out because it'll be good for me. It'll be good for my head.
This week on Walking the Dog, Raymond and I took a seafront stroll in Brighton with the incredibly brilliant comedian Maisie Adam. Along with her sell-out live shows, Maisie is also a hugely popular face on radio and TV, popping up on everything from A League of Their Own to Live at the Apollo and even the Royal Variety Performance. Maisie grew up with dogs, so she's something of a fan, and I think Ray was very won over by her energy, because how could anyone not be? She's one of those people who just sprinkles sunshine on the world, and she also has the most hilarious school nativity play story I've ever heard, but I'll leave her to tell you all about that. If you want to catch Maisie live this year, you can go see her on tour in her brand new show Appraisal, kicking off in the autumn. To find out more and book tickets, go to maisieadam.com. I'm going to stop talking now and hand over to the brilliant woman herself. Here's Maisie and Ray Ray.
I'm excited for this. I miss dog walks. I grew up with dogs. I say dogs, only one at a time.
Maisie Adam taking us straight into the content.
Straight in with dogs.
Love her. Such a pro.
But oh my God, I'd love a dog. I'd love a dog. And I feel like this is maybe the worst thing I could do is go on a dog walk.
Why?
Because this afternoon I'll be convinced that I should get a dog. Well, my mum and dad have a little Jack Russell who's about the same size, and I'm fully converted to small dogs now.
Well, Maisie Adam, follow me.
I will. I just can't take my eyes off Ray.
What do you think of Raymond so far?
Beautiful. It's very behaved. Very, very well behaved. When you were in the loo, we were in the cafe, and that absolute unit of a dog came by. Did you see him? Came by and not even bothered.
Do you know he's got a quiet dignity?
Yeah. He sort of held his stare as well with this other dog. He was like, go on, I dare you. And this dog thought better of it.
He's a bit of a Napoleon, this one.
How old is he?
He's 7.
Looks really good.
Come on, Ray. He has a great life though, Maisie. Can you tell by looking at him he's quite spoiled?
Yeah. Yeah, you can. The way he was eyeing up that sausage in there, he knew what was coming. Is it short for anything?
Raymond.
Okay. Didn't know it could have been Raymondo. Raven.
I'm with the very wonderful Maisie Adam, I should say. We're with Raymond, and I've come to see Maisie in Brighton/Hove.
Yes. I'm still not sure which bit's which, and I've lived here 6 years. I don't really get it. I just call the whole thing Brighton. Hove people hate that, but the whole thing, I just call it Brighton.
And I kind of knew I was going to like you. I mean, we have had previous, I should say.
Of course.
But I knew I was going to get on with you the minute I saw you, because I walked into the cafe and you were wearing...
Oh, yeah, I'm in socks and sliders with some jogging bottoms. I would describe my look at the moment as post-breakup, which is not the case. I look like this is a walk that you've had to really persuade me to come out because it'll be good for me. It'll be good for my head. But the truth is I'm training for a marathon at the moment. And yesterday, I ran round where we're walking now, actually. I did, and I have no qualms about telling you this because it's the furthest I've ever run, 20 miles. And my body is... Look at the way I'm coming up these steps. You need to change the name of this podcast to Waddle with the Dog.
Well, that's what I'll call it when Chris Waddle comes on.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. My trotters are absolutely disgusting. Awful.
We're on the beautiful Brighton seafront. It is slightly spitting.
A little bit. I wish I'd had a beach hut for you.
Oh, yeah.
I wish I'd had one of these beach huts. But, do you know, I can tell you how many there are because I count them as I run to try and detract my mind from the fact that I'm running. There's 147.
Aren't they super expensive, these?
I've heard this, which is why whenever I see one a bit open, I love to have a good perv. Do you know something? Mm-hmm. Oh, I like to know what you're getting for your money. But
or I'm, not, as the case may be.
Yeah. Well, that's it. We've just nipped in there and got a coffee. Walking along it. I think I'd rather sit in a cafe and have a coffee. Go on, Ray. Come on. Good boy.
Oh, he really likes you, Maisie.
I really like Ray.
Do
Stop
you?
Stop it. I'm going to end up with a dog at the end of this.
So, Maisie, talk me through your history and relationship with dogs. Did you have pets growing up?
Yeah. When I was, born, my dad had already had a black Labrador that he had himself when he met my mum.
Classic.
And then I came along. He was called Benson. He was lovely. He was really like big and just very placid, like very chill. And then when Benson passed away, we had a bloodhound, Hubie, who was a bitch, and she was great. She was lovely. I won't have a bad word said about Hubie. She used to drool loads, and I used to call it beer because it looked like the top of a pint. I thought it was beer. Well, I was like four at the time. She used to go, Hubie's covered in beer again. We need to get a towel. So Hubie's beer is what I remember next. And then we had a black lab again called Murphy, who was probably the dog I had for the longest time. And he was great.
Come on, Ray.
Murphy was fantastic. And then he passed away just as I was getting ready to go to uni. And my mum and dad were like, we're not getting another dog. We're not, you know, you're going away. Danny will be going to uni soon.
Danny's your...
He's my little brother. Yeah. He's 4 years younger. And they were like, we want to be able to see the world, whatever. And then literally 6 months later, they were like, we need a dog. We need a dog. We miss going on big walks and... They said about getting a Jack Russell, and I thought, are you mad? They're nippy and yappy, because I'd only ever been around a big dog. And they got this Jack Russell, Baxter, and he's nine now, and he's the best dog I've ever known. He's not nippy, he's not yappy, he's got the biggest personality, even though he's the smallest dog. We all know, like Ray, they've got big personalities.
I worry that people say big personality. Oh. It's a bit like with children when someone says, she's very spirited.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. Or he's a bit of a character. You think, oh, God, he's going to be a prick, you know. Like, no, I mean it. A good big personality. I think that's what you want for a dog. You don't want a boring dog.
No.
You get a dog to spice up your life, don't you? They're fantastic. They're the best for it. They bring company and they bring just good, positive energy.
So you're very comfortable and happy around dogs. You're kind of a...
I love dogs.
Yeah.
I love dogs. I've never met a bad one. I don't think they exist. I love dogs and I'm desperate to have one. But so I live here in Brighton and I live in a very small two-bed flat up two flights of stairs. It's not really... It's just not the right time. I'm definitely going to have one day. But I'm away too much with my job, do you know what I mean? I'm travelling a lot. It's a lot of trains. I can't be taking a dog on all of that. So, but when I'm a bit older, I think, maybe when we've got a family, I might... Well, I know, I will. Sat here going, I will.
So, Maisie, talk me through...
Good boy.
Young Maisie.
Young Maisie.
This was... You grew up... It's Yorkshire you're from.
Yeah. Born in Leeds, grew up in Panel, which is over towards Harrogate, went to school in Harrogate. And I loved it. I loved growing up in Panel. It's quite a small village. But it was one where there was people were always playing out. That's what I really loved. The house we lived in before was really quiet and full of old people in the nicest possible way. So you never saw people playing out. And then we moved to Panel. And I just remember constantly people playing out on the bikes and out on the fields. And I loved that. I loved it. It meant that there was always somebody to go and knock on. And we literally used to get off the bus. It was my friend's 30th the other week. And we were talking. We went on holiday all together. It was 18 of us. And we were talking about when we were kids at school. And we used to get off the bus at Panel and say, right, I'll see you at 5. So we literally would go home, get changed, and then all meet on the park at 5 o'clock and play out until you got called in because it was dark. It was great.
And were you on bikes? Was it sort of ET gang?
Bikes, football, playing in the woods, all sorts. There was a park with swings. We'd do anything, just muck about. I definitely like the outdoors. We used to go on big walks with the dog every Sunday up in the Dales. And I liked, you know, I was in like the Brownies and the Guides, did Duke of Edinburgh, that sort of thing. I liked going out and doing expeditions and camping and orienteering, all of that stuff. Just running around in the sort of woods or fields. I like that. And I think that's why I've loved living in Brighton. I love that access to just fresh, open air. I don't think I could live in, and it's nothing against people who do, but I don't think I could live in London. Yeah. It just feels very congested to me. Even when I go in for the day, I find it really like exciting because you're in the capital, but I love leaving because I like being around open air.
There is a sort of, it's like I feel my neurosis ever so slightly dissipating as soon as I hit here and I get to the front, and I do think there's something very powerful about the sea for putting things in perspective.
I do. And I think for me as well, it's still a bit of a novelty because I grew up nowhere near the sea. Like if you look on a map of England, it's basically right in the middle where I grew up. So, and if we did go to the seafront, it was left to Blackpool or right to Scarborough, which is quite a different seafront vibe to this with the pebble beach. And
what's this?
Oh, he's like a little lab, isn't he?
Black lab, that's like Benson.
He's a little puppy. Oh, it's a sign.
Oh, how sweet.
That's a brand new puppy, that one, isn't he? Still so had those floppy ears.
Do you know, and the guy with the black Labrador puppy, he's got a lovely black cohort tracksuit. I'm not saying he got the dog to go with the tracksuit.
No.
I don't know which he got first, but I'm just saying the dog looks newer than the tracksuit.
It's just nice that somebody else is in a tracksuit because I felt so bad about wearing mine today. But then you've kindly worn yours. Maybe this is the Brighton Seafront uniform.
I want to know about your family life because you sound quite an outdoorsy, active, sort of vivacious kid. What was your sort of family energy like?
Yeah, definitely outdoorsy, definitely outgoing. My dad's always been obsessed with the outdoors. He's you can't keep him inside for long. He's always wanting to go out and about. And my mum is very sporty. She was a PE teacher.
Oh, a bit of a Judy
Murray. When I was a kid. Yeah. Well, yeah, she was never like pushy on me or my brother on pursuing it, but she just loved sport. It's where I get like my love of football from, is from her. And she just was very across it all, you know.
And what did your parents do, Maisie?
So when I was born, my mum was a PE teacher. And then she went and worked at Leeds Beckett University, which was called Leeds Met back then.
Yeah. And then Rob Beckett took it over.
That's it, yeah. And then Rob Beckett got involved.
Yeah. How long has he been running it now?
Oh, too long. That's why my mum's left. Yeah. And then my dad had a, like, furniture, like, antique furniture shop.
Oh, I love that for him.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was really nice and put all the stickers on the furniture with the prices up. He let me do all that.
Did you have a sense of being, I suppose just in terms of your own identity, and did you think, right, we're posh, we're just normal, we're, when you were growing up?
I think normal. I think I had quite a nice, stable, I guess, if you were to put a class on it, a middle class sort of upbringing, it was, you know, pretty nice and pretty, I never felt posh, that's for sure. I never felt posh, and I never felt, not posh. And I think even now it's something that frustrates me is living down south, people hear this accent and assumed that you're, you know, assume that I'm from somewhere still with an outside toilet. And it's quite frustrating because then when you say that you had quite a comfortable upbringing, people then swing right the other way and assume you grew up in blooming Downton Abbey. And you go, no, that, guess what? The north does have a middle ground, you know, that there is a...
Look, I'm just saying...
There is a life up north that isn't outside toilets and, you know, sort of sharing all clothes with your siblings. And the next one, you know, it isn't having a butler and being in Saltburn. There's a middle ground. So, yeah, I guess we were somewhere there with, you know, the PE teacher and the furniture shop. I think as well it happens a lot now with comedy, rightly so, going more diverse. But I've had people say to me, you know, we need more working class voices like yours. And I think, well, hang on, I shouldn't be... What's a working class voice? Working class isn't a voice. It's a background.
Yes.
And if you're booking me to be the working class voice, I've taken somebody who's working class, I've taken their spot. So there's a lot of laziness, I think, around perceptions.
Hello, dog. What's your doggy called? Jizzle. Isn't Jizzle amazing?
What's this one?
This is Raymond.
Ray. He came at 4 months from the RSPCA with a missing foot.
Oh.
And then they recommended tidying it up, so you cut off at the hip.
Really?
And then it means he's not twisting his spine, and that other leg goes middle.
So has Jizzle had three legs all...
Well, we don't know how he lost the foot, yeah. But he's had three legs all his life, yeah. I think because he was young, when it was chopped off, he adapted really well.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't he lovely? My friend hasn't got a dog, but I can... She's already... She's going to come round to it, aren't you?
Yeah.
She grew up with dogs, so I think you're moments away.
He's lovely.
Bye-bye, Jizzle. Raymond was looking at me when I hugged Jizzle, and he was ill with jealousy.
Ill with jealousy.
Come on, Ray. We haven't forgotten you. Come on, Ray.
Come
See
on,
you later.
Mama, lovely to meet you. Oh, I like Jizzle.
Yeah, he was lovely, wasn't he?
So, I like the sound of the Adam family. I bet you got that all the time.
Oh.
Did you?
There used to be a curry house that we rang up when we wanted a curry, and when they said, can we take the name? And we'd say, yeah, the Adam family, and they'd sing the theme tune back to us.
God.
Which we always enjoyed. That's a good way to retain customer loyalty.
So it's you, your mum,
yep.
Your dad, Danny.
Yep.
And did you get on with Danny? Were you close to Danny?
Yeah, we're really close. He lives in Brighton now. In fact, I moved down here because when I started doing comedy,
yeah.
I realised I needed to be closer to London. That was where a lot of the work was. When you're an open mic comedian, you don't have the finances to just move to London.
Yes.
So I was looking at places where I could commute in and out. And my brother went to uni here, but he was at Brighton.
Oh.
And I came down to visit him, and it was when the Fringe is on. Which is basically like the best time to visit Brighton because it's just sunny, there's loads going on, there's all these pop-up tents and bars. It's like, well, it's fringe season, it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
And I just fell in love with it. So, I moved down here. And when my brother left uni, he stayed here. So he still lives about 5 minutes away from me. We were definitely really close growing up. And we're quite different as people, but he's a teacher just outside of Brighton, a geography teacher, which I never would have thought. Like, you know, growing up, I never had him down as a teacher. He was quite naughty, to be honest, but yeah.
You were head girl.
Yeah, I was...
Do you know what? I'm so impressed by that.
I mean, it sounds impressive. The year after I was head girl, the head of the sixth form changed the voting policy so that it was no longer voted for by fellow students, but by the staff. I think he was a bit annoyed when I was voted head girl. Because I wasn't particularly academic. I wasn't... And yet, but I, you know, I was social and I liked getting to know all, you know, everybody. And I don't think I was your typical head girl, and I don't think I was what he had in mind as a head girl, because I was a bit of a loud mouth.
Was sort of being funny part of your currency already by then?
Yeah,
was
for
it?
Sure.
Had
for
that
sure.
always been part of your shtick?
Yeah, yeah, because again, you know, I wasn't ever top of the class, and I wasn't ever the most, you know, popular or the best at a sport. That my thing was making people laugh. I guess that was, that's a good way of putting it, your currency, your way of navigating school life was to make people laugh. And you know, when you're a kid, that's through sometimes quite immature things, so it always makes me laugh retrospectively that I was head girl, because I don't think it was what they had in mind when they created the position. Well, certainly not the bloke who was head of sixth form at the time. He made his feelings quite known about me being voted it. I mean, I think as well, I feel really, really lucky to say this, because it wasn't really until I left school and met people from other parts of the country who went to different schools and realised that what I had at high school wasn't necessarily the norm. There wasn't really that massive difference between the groups at my school I've realised now that I was very lucky to go to a school where you were celebrated whatever it is that you were part of. So the kids who were dead, you know, into their music and were in the band, I don't mean like garage bands, I mean like in the orchestra.
Yeah.
They were kind of, they weren't picked on for being the lad with the trombone. It was like, oh, that's the guy who's really good at the trombone. And the same as football. Football didn't really carry on, you know, sporty kids didn't carry more currency or weight than musical kids or kids who were, you know, into the gaming and technology or anything. So, I mean, I guess as a group, we were, a lot of my friends were musical. I'm terrible at me, I didn't play anything, but there was a lot of kids in my group who were in the school plays. There was a lot of kids who were good at art, photography.
Do you know what you were? You were sporty types with a hinterland.
Yeah. Because I was hopeless at music. I didn't sing, I didn't dance. But I loved drama. I loved play, you know, being in plays. And I loved sport. I really loved PE and all of that. So.
And did you want to be an actor? Was that an ambition from a really young age? So you liked performing and stuff?
I liked performing, but for a long time I didn't think it was a viable career option, and also I didn't know the path to it. I loved my school, as I've said, it was a wonderful place to go to, but it was, I have to say, somewhere that, you know, pathed out university as the sort of only route. And I was like, well, I don't know if university makes you an actor. I think it's something different. And I was lucky that I had a very good drama teacher who pulled me aside and it was a lovely thing that she said. It'll sound harsh, but it was really good. She said, you need to go and apply to drama school rather than university, because as somebody who's not particularly academic, if you go and do a drama degree at uni, you'll be doing essays and theses. You know, drama school, you'll be learning a more practical, I guess, vocational, whatever the word is, approach. But I still just thought, well, I'm going to be an actor. And I got to the end of the acting course and realised I like performing, but I don't know if it's acting. And I think through lack of work, I realised that the alternative was maybe comedy.
I'm a huge fan of your stand-up.
Oh, thank you.
And you do a brilliant bit of material centering around the Nativity play.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which, like a lot of great stand-up, is funny but also, I think, quite telling in some ways.
Yeah. I got cast in the school nativity as the wise man who brought Myrrh's wife, which I didn't think was a role, and I'm still not convinced it is. But it's that thing, isn't it? You see them now, there's blooming lobsters and octopuses and whatnot. I think they were just trying to fill the roles. But I didn't have any lines, only the men did. Because it was the 90s, that's how it was back then. But they, basically each of the blokes had to step forward and say what they brought the baby Jesus. And it's material, but it's true. My mum showed me the video years later, and the first lad stepped forward. I mean, we were like 5 years old. First lad stepped forward and said, I bring you gold. And the second lad stepped forward and said, I bring you, and he did say Frankenstein. Not frankincense, but hey, you know, maybe he wasn't classically trained. And then husband went to step forward, and at the last minute I take it off him and push myself forward and went, we bring you myrrh together, which, yeah, I guess is quite telling of my feelings about a bloke speaking for you, you know.
I love that you did that.
I had no memory of it, but I felt quite proud when I was watching it back. I was like, go on, Maze.
It's a real early moment of feminism.
I think so, yeah. I think it was the start of what we now call fourth wave feminism. I think I was the...
You knew it was wrong.
The start of it, yeah. I think genuinely back then it was the, what about me, as opposed to any worthy cause. I think I liked performing, and I think I was annoyed that I didn't have a line. And that some bloke did, just because he was a boy, even though he didn't want the line.
I'm seeing the nativity in the sort of biopic of your life.
Yeah.
That's where we'd start.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Sort of set a precedent, I think.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I guess what I think about drama school sometimes is that you can get all the kids that wanted to be Mary and Joseph in the school play.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And the shepherds don't go to drama school.
No, it's an absolute pool of big fish from small ponds, definitely. I had a strange time at drama school. I think it was not what I thought it was going to be. And I think a large part of it is because it does just attract a lot of people who were sort of the main character in their own lives. And I think, do you know what I mean, though? And, and you know, really, an actor has to be somebody who's got a bit of perspective. And I'm not sure it attracted that type of person. And I also think, I can only speak to the drama school I went to, but I don't think it was particularly a healthy place or a place that provides you with the necessary tools for learning to be an actor. I think the best thing to do is to go out and learn it. You know, get involved in some local productions and work your way through with networking and learn the craft there, personally. But I don't know what it's like at other drama schools. Maybe it's a lot better with a broader range of pupils, a less toxic staff base. And I don't think you should have to pay 27 grand to pretend to be a tree. But hey, what do I know, eh?
Is it a bit like comedy in many ways? And like all, any form of creative art.
Yeah.
Where you kind of only really learn by doing it.
That's it. That's it, exactly. I'm not sure, you know, if there was a course in stand-up comedy, I'm not sure it would make you the best comedian. I think, as you say, the best way of learning is to go out and just do it. I appreciate it's a lot harder with acting because it's harder to get in the room without an agent. That's what pushed me into comedy, is you could be in the room without an agent or without castings or anything. You just sign up to an open mic, and if you're funny, you get booked again. Whereas acting, it's so reliant on other people and whether you look the right part and, you know, whether the director has a good relationship with you or whether the cast pulls their weight or everybody else has learnt their lines or the writing is good. How many films have you seen where the reviews say the script was rubbish, but thankfully this actress managed to elevate it? There's only so much you can do, whereas comedy, it's all in your hands, isn't it? You write it, you say it, you respond in the moment to the room. It's far more independent and far more in control. You know, you sort of get into drama school and think, great, right, sorted. I'm going to do my 3 years and then I'll probably get signed by an agent and put on a film set. And instead, everybody's, you know, working temp jobs all the time.
And having...
And I didn't have an agent. Some of them got signed by agents. I didn't have anything. I was moved back home with my mum and dad. Was really... All my mates lived in London and I'm back up in this village in the middle of nowhere, you know, sort of feeling a bit of a failure. You can't even get in the room for a casting because you don't have an agent that can vouch for you. I think that's it as well. Drama school's full of a lot of people who sort of sat back waiting for their agent to call them. And I was sort of... I don't want to sound like I'm blowing my own trumpet, but I think that's why stand-up is more suited to me, because you go out and you get the... You know, you're emailing people going, can I have this gig? Can I show you a clip of my stand-up? Can I do this? Can I do that?
Mm.
You sort of have to go to them. You have to work... To get the audience. It's an interaction stand-up, whereas, you know, if you're on stage in a play, I get frustrated if there's a lot of people to go through or things that need signing off before you do. So all of that admin, I hate it.
Are you quite direct?
No, I hate conflict.
I hate conflict. And that's where I struggle in life, is because I just think, well, let's just do it. Why are we working out? You know, why are we deliberating on, should we go here or should we go there? Should we book this or should we book that? The admin level, like stuff like the fringe, really frustrates me. You know, you've got to have this approval and this venue booked, and then you've got to work out this and sign off these forms. And I think, just put me in a room with a microphone and let me speak to people. Even if I have a day in my diary where there's nothing to do, I kind of feel a bit frustrated. I feel a bit like I'm just floating through life. And I like to feel like I'm always doing something to...
Do
I
you?
Suppose.
Always
this is turning into a bit of therapy. But I think I've realised... Well, we just brought up then about when I moved back home after uni, and that I remember that feeling, I guess the word would be stagnant. It felt like a step back. It felt, and because it's in this small village and it's where I grew up, I'd look out and be like, that's the field where we all played out on bikes, but they're not here anymore. They're all now working in offices in London, and I'm here. What's happening? I need to get, and it was just frustration. You know, I wasn't getting any work, so I did stand up because I just wanted to be doing something.
And this is the point in the biopic at which the lights dim and then we have a spotlight.
Yep.
Set the scene. Where are we? First gig.
We're in Ilkley Playhouse. I had no idea. I knew I wanted to try stand-up. I just knew. And I never thought that growing up, but I'd always... When I worked in the... I used to work in Fat Face around this time when I was just earning money to keep myself afloat. And I used to print off till roll when I was bored and write little ideas for jokes, fold them up, and I put them in this tin that was on my desk in my bedroom, and I never did anything with them. I'm talking like over a few years I did this. And then when I came back after drama school, I was really frustrated, wasn't getting any work. I was like, what about stand-up? And there was no open mic nights. There was pro nights, you know, you could go into Leeds and there was a comedy night, you couldn't get on it. There was no open spots. And then eventually the Ilkley Literature Festival, which was a book festival that I was like volunteering at to help get experience on my CV in the arts, they put this call out for an open night, and they were like, you can do anything you want. You can do, you know, dance, poetry, a monologue you've written, apply now. And I wrote in and said I'd like to do stand-up comedy. And they came back and said, yep, great, you can have Thursday night, 7 till 8. And it was an hour long, and I didn't think that was weird, because when I'd gone and seen comedy, it was an hour at least. So I got all the till roll out of the tin.
Fat Face.
Just strung it all together, memorised it. My friend Katie from school, her dad always had this really good camera that he kindly lent the school to film the production so that parents could buy a copy. So I got in touch with Katie's dad and was like, can I borrow your camera to film it? And I filmed the gig. It was an hour long. I mean, if we watched it now, it would be a good 10 minutes stretched over 58. But I did that gig, and it all that feeling of frustration, stagnating and feeling back, like it was just an absolute rush and a buzz, and I loved it, and I knew I didn't want to do anything else. And then I started gigging down in London. I'd get the mega bus down and do like 5 gigs in a weekend and then come back up. And I started to get better and better. And then someone told me to do the newcomer competition, and I did that, and then it was all good after that.
And what was the result of that?
That was So You Think You're Funny.
And
I won it. Yeah.
Are you
that changed everything. That's where I got signed off the back of it, and that changed everything. So that was 8 months into doing it. Yeah. Madness, really. But very grateful I took the plunge. So although we didn't think that would be how it would be in the biopic in Ilkley Playhouse, it turned out to be the best choice I ever made. It was good.
I love the biopic.
Yeah,
do you know what? Do you say biopic or biopic?
I actually never know which one is correct.
What should we go for?
I want to go biopic.
I want to say biopic.
You want to go biopic?
I want to say biopic because it's more literal.
Okay, biopic. Sounds like two words, biopic. Biopic.
Do you know what? I don't want to fall out with you over this.
Yeah, I know. Can you imagine?
Imagine if we've been getting on all this time and then we just walk off in different directions on the seafront.
Imagine
we,
if this...
we fell out over the word biopic.
Do you know Maisie Adam? No, we don't speak anymore. No.
You mean Maisie Adam?
I really hope you loved part one of this week's Walking the Dog. If you want to hear the second part of our chat, it'll be out on Thursday. So whatever you do, don't miss it. And remember to subscribe so you can join us on our walks every week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.